From the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Cremery. The Juneau School Board adopted a $96 million budget last night based on an assumed increase in state and city funding. KTOO's Katie Anastas has more.
The Juneau School Board approved a budget based on a key assumption, that the base student allocation, the amount of per student funding from the state, will increase by at least $430 next year. That BSA increase would give the district $3.3 million more than it got from the state this year. Superintendent Bridget Weiss spoke at the beginning of Tuesday's board meeting.
There are estimates built in here, and one of those is that increase to BSA.
Last month, the school board voted to build its budget around a $430 increase. The idea was to use a more conservative estimate than the $1,000 increase legislators have proposed. But the BSA is only guaranteed to go up by $30 next year. If lawmakers don't further increase it, Juneau school district leaders will have to make budget cuts. Weiss said that would likely involve increasing the pupil-to-teacher ratio, essentially making class sizes bigger.
So that's a lever that you likely would have to use if that worst-case scenario happened.
Stacy Joof, principal of Site Gastineau Community School, said she was worried about the board's assumption that the BSA would increase more than $30.
It does deeply concern me that we're banking on such an increase from the state, and the optimist in me really hopes that it happens, but the realist in me is very concerned.
Other school districts in Alaska, including the Anchorage School District, the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District, and the Kodiak Island Borough School District, have built their budgets around the $30 increase. The only staff cuts in Juneau's approved budget are to six elementary school library assistant positions. The district plans to use $1.6 million in remaining COVID relief money to pay for some teachers and online classroom materials. Cassie Olin, the district's administrative services director, says administrators are considering reducing school bus service next year in order to save money.
We're trying to figure out the best combination of consolidation and if we can consolidate some of our buses together so that we can decrease our routes.
The district's budget also assumes they'll get the maximum amount of money the city is allowed to contribute, along with $2.5 million in outside the cap funding. The district must submit its budget to the city for final approval by April 5th. In Juneau, I'm Katie Anastas.
Juneau resumed discussion of landslide and avalanche hazard zones this week with the introduction of a new draft ordinance. The proposed land use code considers the adoption of new hazard maps and possible limits on development in hazard zones. In a Planning Commission work session yesterday, the city's Director of Community Development, Jill McLean, laid out the main conflict surrounding the maps.
It's the balance over property rights and life, and you and the Assembly have the responsibility of trying to find that balance.
New hazard maps from 2021 place half of the buildings downtown in moderate to severe hazard zones. Those maps were commissioned to replace the city's outdated maps from the 1970s. Now the City Assembly must decide how to regulate the new zones. The draft ordinance at this stage only considers the severe hazard zones. The new draft ordinance differs from the existing code in a few key ways. Notably, it suggests that property owners provide a written notice of hazard zones for potential buyers and renters. Some, including Planning Commissioner David Epstein, were vocal supporters of the new addition.
I think we have a duty to inform, and that's how I interpreted this. We have an obligation to let people know, hey, this property's in a severe landslide or avalanche area, period.
But even if the disclosure requirement sticks, McLean says the city had no plan to make it enforceable. The other major difference is the distinction between avalanche and landslide zones. While the city's older maps combine the two, the new maps and the draft ordinance consider them separately. That sparked debate about whether to regulate severe landslides and severe avalanche zones in a similar way. Much of that discussion focused on expanding properties to fit more people. Avalanche events are generally more predictable, while landslides can happen sporadically and have a wide variety of causes. McLean says that makes them harder to regulate.
It's probably one of the most difficult, I think, ordinances in the land use code to work on, just given sort of the infrequency or frequency, however you choose to look at it, of these types of events.
In many ways, the scope of the new maps is limited. They outline zones where landslides are possible, even likely, but they cannot give an idea of the timing or magnitude of events. And because of that uncertainty, the deputy chair, Alicia Hughes-Scandes, said the city should hesitate to further limit property rights.
We don't totally understand risk yet. And so the idea that we could then make policy decisions that will impact homeowners now and in the future feels perhaps presumptive without the rest of that information.
The city has no plans to expand research on avalanche and landslides locally. The debate over the new ordinance will continue in the next committee meeting next month before it is presented for public comment later this spring. Yesterday, the Environmental Protection Agency proposed the first ever national limit on PFAS compounds in drinking water. The chemicals have been linked to cancer, liver damage, and high cholesterol. Here's EPA Administrator Michael Reagan making the announcement.
We anticipate that when fully implemented, this rule will prevent thousands of deaths and reduce tens of thousands of serious PFAS-related illnesses.
The news comes as one Alaska senator continues his fight to regulate PFAS, which have been found in drinking water from the North Slope to Southeast Alaska at the state level. KTOO's Claire Strumble has a story.
State Senator Jesse Keel took the mic at a rally for clean water protections on the Capitol steps in Juneau. He said the EPA announcement is great news, but he still needs to pass his bill to stop contamination before any more gets in Alaska's drinking water.
The most important thing we can do in Alaska today is turn off the tap.
Keel represents Gustavus, where PFAS from firefighting foam has contaminated drinking water, soil, and berries. He's tried to regulate PFAS for years. Keel's current bill, SB 67, would outlaw firefighting foams that contain PFAS and require the use of safe alternatives. The foams are typically used on fuel fires at airports, and Keel says they're the main source of PFAS contamination in the state.
We all have to put out fires. Everybody recognizes that. There are safe ways to do it that don't poison our firefighters, that don't poison our drinking water.
Michelle Meyer was at the rally. She is Tlingit and grew up in Yakutat, where PFAS contamination from firefighting foams has been documented.
I drank the water at my elementary school for years and was contaminated, so I am coming to terms that I can probably attribute it to my exposure.
She was diagnosed with what her doctors called a rare form of leukemia when she was in her late 50s.
I want to see this bill passed so that no more children are exposed to PFAS-contaminated water.
PFAS chemicals are linked to cancer, among other ill health effects. But it's hard to attribute specific illnesses to them because they accumulate in the system over time. Meyer's son, Connor, joined her on the Capitol steps. He said he'll never forget the pain of seeing his mother so ill and preparing for her death. He also attributes his mother's illness to PFAS, and he says it could have been prevented.
All of this came because she chose to stay in a place that she was culturally connected to. And it scares me that living in the village is not responsible health-wise, that the inaction from the government and from community leaders around this topic have created an unsafe space for children to grow up.
Alaska does not regulate PFAS in drinking water. That will change when the EPA's standards take effect. The manager of the state's drinking water program is supportive of the move.
I think this is a step in the right direction.
Cindy Christian has worked for the state agency for nearly 25 years.
PFAS has been an issue throughout the country, and the EPA has committed to promulgating this rule.
Christian said the state will adopt federal standards when they're finalized. That will limit PFAS in drinking water to 4 parts per trillion, a tiny amount. Water systems throughout the state will likely be required to test their water and treat it if PFAS are present. For example, the municipal water in Fairbanks has PFAS in it. The levels aren't a violation because Alaska doesn't regulate them, but they will be if the new federal standards take effect. Patrice Lee is an advocate for clean air and water in Fairbanks. She testified in favor of Keel's bill this week.
Scores of lakes can no longer be fished in. The fish cannot be taken or eaten. And my very favorite family place, the Piledriver Slough, where we've always spent Mother's Day, can no longer be fished in.
The public has 60 days to comment on the EPA's proposal. The agency expects to enact the standards by the end of this year. Once that happens, the state will have 2 years to adopt the new rules. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strimple.
And as for the weather, it's currently cloudy and 34 degrees. There's still some possibility of snow later today and before 7 tonight. And then it's supposed to turn into rain. The low tonight is around 34 degrees. The high tomorrow is 40, and there's 100% chance of rain as it stands now. Tomorrow night's also supposed to be rainy, and we might get a break from that on Friday with a high of 43. This weekend is supposed to be cloudy and in the 40s. You're listening to KTOO.